Blog Talk Radio.
Wins.
Losses.
Shutouts.
Shootouts.
Forehand.
Five hole.
It's time for your recap of Pittsburgh Penguins hockey.
The most important interviews, best information, hottest news, and no topic is off limits.
Radio PI. Now on the Radio PI Podcast Network.
That is right. It is Radio PI here on the Radio PI Podcast Network and the Pens Initiative Airwaves, also the Pittsburgh Sports Initiative Airwaves, this broadcast, as well as every broadcast we've done throughout this season and now gearing back for this Radio PI reboot of sorts, the stretch run of the regular season onward towards the postseason is made possible and brought to you by Dr. Sheeler of Sheeler Chiropractics and DKPittsburghSports.com. I am your host, Mike Osti, and I will be joined alongside on this magic carpet ride by my co-host for this broadcast and Pens Initiative and Radio PI colleague, Nick Case. And we will also have a guest to join us for this show. He will be somebody that can bring you not only the Pittsburgh Penguins perspective by being a Pittsburgh Penguins fan, by being a former member of KDKA TV here in Pittsburgh, someone who works in media and still gives an appreciation to the Pittsburgh Penguins, but also now has worked in Boston in TV and now currently at Fox 5 DC in the DMV, the Washington DC metropolitan area. And that'll be Jim Loke of Fox 5 DC. So he'll be able to also touch on the Washington Capitals, the Penguins' rival, if they finally can get over the hump and have a deep playoff run, and if this will finally be different than past years. Also kind of comparing them, are they the favorite in the Eastern Conference for sure? Is the Eastern Conference Bears for the taking? Will that recent game against the Pittsburgh Penguins kind of speak to how vulnerable they are, and if the Pittsburgh Penguins are so dangerous now and have built themselves up to being so dangerous now that they could dethrone either the Capitals or anybody else in the conference and are now once again one of the major contenders in the Eastern Conference, if not for Lord's Stanley's Cup. Without any further ado, though, I'm going to first bring on my co-host and then bring on Jim Loke of Fox 5 DC. Got to just double check, make sure I got who's who here on the soundboard and got who's number two. So first things first, I will welcome back on the Radio PI Airwaves, the Pens Initiative Airwaves, my co-host for this show and many of these shows, Nick Case. Nick, how you doing? It's been a while. How you been?
Oh, it's nice to shake off the cobwebs. It's been a minute, as the cool kids say. A little bit. So it's nice to shake off the cobwebs and to have such an esteemed guest as Jim Loke on the airwaves. It's, you know, always had good interactions with him on Twitter. He's always been somebody that's been fun to talk to, just, you know, in text messages and direct messages. It's nice to finally be able to one-on-one discuss with him interesting things from an interesting man.
Maybe he can have the honor of being the next most interesting man in the world. But I will agree with your sentiments there. It's great to be back, and I think instead of rusting, you know, having to shake off the cobwebs and shake off the rust, I think it's going to be like riding a bike. I mean, we've also been doing other things in media while we've been on this break of Radio PI, but the Radio PI people have not heard from us, so they now get to be graced with our genius once again and get to be entertained. And we will allow them to be entertained by a fresh voice here on Radio PI. I don't know why we never brought him on before. I asked him and he was thrilled to be on the show. So we got to bring him on even more after this one, long as this goes well. So some pressure for us, but we will now, without any further anticipation and further hype, we will now bring on Jim Loke from Fox 5 DC, a native of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and a Pittsburgh Penguin fan, but an appreciator of all hockey and sports. Jim Lovejay, Fox 5 DC. Jim, how are you doing? And thanks again for coming on the Radio PI and Penmanship Airways.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for having me.
How are you doing down there? Are you bringing a what? It's around 60 plus degrees here in Pittsburgh. I have some friends down in DC. It's been warm there, but a little warmer than we've had. But you guys have had actually more snow. It's kind of been weird. So how's the weather there? How's your Thursday afternoon doing? Getting towards an Easter holiday.
Well, it's 75 degrees. We're gonna hit 75 down here today. It's the Big Cherry Blossom Festival, which you know that's a thing down here.
I hear that.
I haven't seen them yet, but nonetheless, no, it's a beautiful day down here. I got to tell you, the winter has been interesting because this is my first winter down here since coming from Boston, and I got everybody in Boston harassing me saying that I brought the snow down to DC with me, but we only had about, I think, like a total of like 30 some inches. We had about 30 some inches, and about 25 of them came down one weekend. So it's been fine. We've been coping. The only effect the snow's had was they postponed that one Pens Caps game.
Okay. Well, you had more snow than we had in Pittsburgh, though. So maybe you did bring it with you. You had more snow than in Pittsburgh. I'm assuming Boston had more snow, but you had more snow than some eastern cities that usually get hit hard. And I know Nick doesn't have to deal with any of that in South Carolina. So.
It's 80 degrees here today.
It's 80 degrees here today. I'm outside walking around in the sun, and we had flurries. It's snow flurries, and that was the big story of the winter. So
Nick and I had a very scintillating conversation on Twitter about, a couple of days ago, about profusely sweating during these warm, not even hot temperatures, during warm temperatures. So, you know, my prayers go out to you this weekend.
It's nice right now. Give it about a month, and it's all downhill from there. So
exactly.
I do like that we have a nice sandwich broadcast. Mike's up there in Pittsburgh. I'm in Charleston. And Jim, you're like right smack dab in the middle in D.C. I'm about six hours from you. You're about 6 hours from Mike. It works out really nicely.
Maybe 4.5 from me. It's a little bit closer with Jim in D.C. But yeah,
In theory, it's six for me, but with traffic, it's really around 8. So I'm fudging the numbers.
We're officially middle-aged people because we've just started talking about weather and traffic.
Those are my two probably biggest pet peeves in life is weather and traffic, and I like to open up any broadcast anywhere with weather and traffic to get myself upset before we start.
Weather and traffic on the twos of every hour.
We got
to
give it.
Welcome to my Pittsburgh career. Go ahead.
Hey, I was a traffic reporter in my radio days, so I'm not.
I know completely. Yeah.
Well, that's one thing I will say. I've done many things in media, but I've never really done traffic. My roommate does some traffic reports in K right now, and I did open up a show I do on the Pittsburgh Podcast Network talking about how balmy the winter was. So I always bring up the weather, but I never have done the weather reporting. Maybe I'll touch that at some point here. But Jim, before you go to cover some cherry blossoms, and I know how exciting that is down there in D.C., and I just made that with some sarcasm, but maybe one day I'll involve myself. I hear big things. I know some people that are traveling down just to see that.
Right.
So I guess it is exciting as the promotion is for it. But you of course are following the Pittsburgh Penguins closely as you always have, but also now get to follow the Washington Capitals, get to kind of cover them down being in D.C., so you, I'm sure, watched and covered closely the game recently between the two teams. First, I want to get to the Penguins, though. What have you noticed in terms of the resurgence of the Penguins as a true contender, in terms of the turnaround of the Penguins, in terms of under Mike Sullivan, this rebuilding of sorts of the offense of Sidney Crosby, of Chris Letang, and really being back to what they were supposed to be? And then not only that, but how does that then translate in your mind to the playoffs? Do you see them as a truly dangerous championship contender now, maybe more so than you would have prior to Sullivan several months ago?
Well, you know, first of all, a lot's been said about, you know, the parallels we're seeing to the Pens run 7 years ago, you know, which obviously culminated with where the turnaround started when you got rid of Michael Terry and you brought in Dan Bylsma. But fast forward to today, I think, first of all, it comes down to that course correction that depends. You know, I think when you brought in Mike Sullivan, what you did was you did something that should have been done a few years ago, or going back a year or so ago, in terms of, I thought the Rutherford hire was a bad hire in the first place. Obviously, he's still there. I didn't think it was, when you look at who was out there on the market in terms of who could come to this team and coach it, when they were looking after, you know, after Bielsma was dismissed, I think they missed the boat on that one. So first things first, you brought in a guy who has a pretty solid resume. You know, he has some head coaching experience in the NHL. I think that was one thing that was lacking prior. So that, you know, that to some extent helps. But I think, you know, think about the beginning of the season where, you know, we were all wondering where the hell Sidney Crosby went, where he was, and finally, you know, he shook the cobwebs off and he came into his own, and that was obviously quite important. You know, it hurts a bit to not have Malkin on board for the time being. But, and I think there was a certain amount of frustration. I think we all of us Penguins fans who've been following the team for years and years and years. I mean, come on, I look back to 90, 91, 92, when every year down to that trade deadline, you know, before we could hunker down in front of our phones or a computer, you know, you're waiting for news on the radio about Craig Patrick pulling off some blockbuster trade, and it was just always a surprise. Oh, we got Rick Tocchet. So we didn't have that big signature trade, but as you find out, you didn't necessarily need it. And you know, one player that's been a big surprise to me is I think a lot of people, is Trevor Daley. And I think about when I was in New York about 2 weeks ago, when the Pens played the Rangers at MSG, and that was the second time. I think it's been my third Pens Rangers game at MSG, and I think they lost the first. This is the first time I saw the Pens win up there. But
humble
brag. Daley had two goals in that game. So I mean, I think we've seen some. I think these guys have the right leadership at this point. They realize what's at stake here. I think that, it's hard to believe, but we're at a point now where you don't want to say guys like Crosby are on the downside of their career, but I mean, he's been in the league for almost 10 years now. So, you know, we got to start seeing some signs that this team can compete. And I got to tell you, being down in D.C. and seeing the kind of season that the Capitals have put together, you know, that these guys are legitimate, and you know, this is probably the chips are falling into place for the Washington Capitals, where this should be, doesn't mean it will be, but it should be their year. The fact that the Pens are turning on the afterburners and moving up, at least trying to get out of that eighth spot, you know, you want to see, I would love to not see the Penguins play the Capitals in the first round. I think that's what it comes down to.
Your last stop on radio, or not radio, on TV, pardon me, was in Boston. Before the Penguins, Mike Sullivan's last head coaching stop was in Boston. Were you able to find out anything about Sullivan's style based on anyone you worked with or anyone you knew up in Boston at the time? Or were you able to gain any insight from that?
No, not really, because I figure he wasn't there very long, and that was actually back in, what, 03, I think he was there, what, 03 to 05 or something along those lines. 03 to 06. No, to be quite honest with you, it's funny you see the styles in media in different markets and how they cover sports, because, you know, Pittsburgh is obviously, it's Steelers wall to wall. And then you get a couple months of Penguins coverage when they near the playoffs. I don't think any of these stations in Pittsburgh knew what the hell to do with the Pirates the last couple of years. I mean, when I see stations saying, send us your Pirate fight song, it's not the same thing. But in Boston, you know, there's you know, that unhealthy obsession with the evil empire, the morally bankrupt franchise that is the New England Patriots. But you know, when it comes to the Bruins, I don't think there was a lot of attention paid to them until you hit that Stanley Cup year in 2011, and in the ensuing years, they've kind of I wouldn't say fallen out of favor, but the obsession or at least the fascination of the team hasn't been there. So no, I didn't get a lot of that's a roundabout way of saying no, I didn't have much input on the style that Sullivan had. But you know, they've gone through significant change in the last 10 years or so, and he was just sort of just a small part of a rather larger picture.
That is kind of surprising, too, when you speak on media coverage of the Boston Bruins in Boston, because, of course, everyone can be honest, hockey is the fourth major team sport in this country, but in Boston, with Bobby Orr being an iconic mm-hmm. franchise, being around so long, they hadn't had that success, I guess, in the early 2000s, but I am kind of surprised, and I did hear that from some friends of mine in college who were from up there that said, hey, up until the cup year or once they start getting to that level, no one really cared. I would maybe have guessed that even to say in Pittsburgh, maybe the fans weren't going to the arena during the X Generation. I wouldn't have thought that would have been the case in Boston as much, though. So I'm kind of surprised to hear you say that.
Well, I think, too, and you have to look at from my perspective, because I'm working for, you know, I was working for the ABC station in Boston, you know, one of the major affiliates. But, you know, sports as a whole, when it comes to the local coverage, you know, you're seeing that more of an emphasis on, you know, it's more of a niche thing when it comes to coverage in local markets, because, you know, up there you have Comcast Sportsnet, you have NES, NESN. So, you know, on the local level, we're not really paying attention to the day-to-day operations and the day-to-day travails of these teams, which, you know, to some extent, I think the viewers lose out on a little bit, but, you know, that's just the way it goes. I mean, we figure if you're a diehard about the Boston Bruins or any hockey team in general, you know the places to go, and that's why you're seeing teams like the Penguins invest so heavily in Penguins TV and producing a lot of their own content, because you figure if nobody else is going to take the time to do these, then they might as well do it and make some money off it.
I think Nick can agree, and I'm sure you even realized this, Jim, when you went up to Boston, that it also probably is partly for with the fan base and their interest only when, say, the Bruins are winning, is even being historic, is probably partly because, as I was saying, well, they're an historic franchise, so wouldn't you always ride with them? Well, they now have four historic franchises up. I mean, that location is very, very spoiled. The Red Sox, now the Patriots, and the Boston Celtics, they're all four arguably historic franchises, not only recent, but throughout all of history. So they that's a very, very spoiled fan base. Bruins are going to take the fourth back seat to three other historic franchises that have also won championships over that same time period, if not more titles.
Yeah, and let me say, you know, when we talk about fan bases here, I want to say one thing about, and I was kind of vocal about this even when I was in Boston, but more so now that I'm not there. You know, it's kind of funny because the Celtics won a couple years ago, and then they've had a couple lean years, and the fan base dropped off a little bit. 2013, the Penguins were playing the Bruins at the Garden, and I had tickets to the game that Friday night. I had a couple buddies coming into town from Pittsburgh. One was driving up from Bristol, Connecticut. We were excited about it. We were pumped. And then the marathon bomber manhunt went on that night, so they postponed the game to next day.
Wow.
So two of my buddies ended up not even making it from Pittsburgh. My buddy from Bristol drove up. We went to the game, and we said, you know what, we're going to go to this game. We're going to be respectful of people of Boston. We're going to, you know, we're just going to, you know, not worry about wearing Penns gear. You know, you got a Red Sox hat? Yeah, wear the Red Sox cap. So we go there. We're thinking, you know, we're the bigger people. We're the opposing fans walking in, supporting the city. And we sit down, and these two guys behind us, the first thing, like, hey, what, you guys shop at the same hat store? Because we both have Red Sox hats on. And then, you know, Ginla scores his first goal for the Penguins, one of his first goals at that game, and he and I go nuts. And the guys just got more obscene and more, you know, like almost to the point of violence. I mean, as fan bases go, most of the fans I encountered at the Garden were jerks. When I've been to Caps games before in the ensuing years, I've been there before I lived here. I came down and went to a couple Caps games. You know, it's a game. And yeah, we made trash talk, but at the end, hey, good game, guys. So I think there's this perception of Boston being this great sports town, when in reality, you know, it's just there's this negative perception that sometimes, unfortunately, is true when it comes to some of these fans.
You probably do get a lot of that everywhere, and I'm sure the same comments could be said at going to games as an opposing fan in Philadelphia or some of those other some other those high pressure. When you have high pressure, when it's a big media market and there's high pressure that if this team does not win, we're all going to be just irate, not upset, but irate. It's going to create a lot of that animosity, a lot of that anger and angst at games, and it does almost take. And we've seen a lot of that in Pittsburgh, even in Penguin games. Once they won that cup, had those 5 years in a row of playoff disappointments, the regime then changed over. Before that regime changed over, even some media members around here felt that it became a country club atmosphere. It was no longer fun. It really wasn't even fun to go to games, to cover the team, to be a fan at all, because it was so high-pressured that if anything was negative, it was the world was over and everyone walked away with their heads down and had to cry or else you were a weirdo. It just wasn't fun anymore, and I think the Penguins are getting back to that. But Jim, I do also want to ask you, in terms of the Penguins getting back to that, do you believe, Nick asked you about your dealings with Mike Sullivan in the past, do you believe that this turnaround, at least in terms of being more securely into the postseason, Crosby being a little bit back to what he was, he's now an MVP candidate again, he might never be the best player in the world like he was before, but he's still back to kind of that beat company, Letang, Malkin before the injury, Kessel's been up and down, but this team is definitely appearing different than they were under Mike Johnston. Do you feel that credit is deservingly so being paid to Mike Sullivan, or might even just be a natural progression of the season? As we all know, sometimes coaches, GMs, teams, they just fall on championships or success almost by accident, where somebody else is building it up and they happen to get fired. They get there, they're almost close, but they didn't get it done, and then all of a sudden it takes over. For example, to go back to a Boston comparison again, Terry Francona taking a team that went to the ALCS, losing in game seven, wins the World Series. Now, yes, you give him credit for that, but I think a lot of credit needs to be paid to the previous group, even though it's not really paid to them. Does Mike Sullivan get too much credit, or is it deserving credit right now for the success of the turnaround of this Penguin team?
Let me answer your question with a question. How much credit do you give Michael Therrien for that cup back in 2009?
Oh, that's a sore spot. That's a sore subject for me. Yeah.
Go first.
Yeah. I mean, I think he gets – I think it's automatic that obviously when you see a sea change like that in the culture – And the day-to-day management of that team, you have to give credit where credit is due to Sullivan. I don't know. You know what it was about Mike Johnston? There was just, you know, I mean, there was a lot of talk that whoever they were going to bring in, it was likely going to be a guy who was coaching in the NHL for the first time, or at least, you know, a head coaching job for the first time. There was the one guy they were going after, Willie Desjardins, who ended up going to Vancouver. And then they turned to Johnston. I wonder what could have been had they gone after Barry Trotz, you know. But you can't look at what would have been. You look at what is. And what is right now is the fact that this team is surging and Mike Sullivan's the head coach. And whatever he's doing right. And, you know, there's not a switch that you throw. I mean, there's just not a switch that you throw the day you change coaches. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I think what the true sign of this team is going to be when they make the postseason, if they can get by the first round. I think that's a good example, or that'd be a good indication, because you know, you're talking about two different seasons, and we're going to see how he operates in season number two moving forward.
I think part of that too, and maybe you'd agree, is this system is just, it's a polar opposite system, a polar opposite mentality, a polar opposite personality, a polar opposite resume and system. It's just totally different than under Mike Johnston. That's also part of it.
And I feel like part of that is just feeding off the different coaches. I mean, the personalities of the coaches too, because Sullivan was supposed to be brought in to bring accountability and all this stuff, but in the end, the team seemed as lifeless as he's seen behind the bench. You know, like, mm-hmm. The only thing that I have memories of him are, like, screenshots of him just looking nonplussed behind the bench, and that's it. And that's kind of how the team was. Whereas you see Johnston out there screaming his head off at everybody, and not just yelling at them, but yelling to them and seeming to obstruct them. And now the team just seems more lively and upbeat. They seem so much less lethargic compared to how they were under their other coach, who seemed lethargic. And I think that's just as much of anything as the system.
Yeah, and you look at the last, how many times have we seen this team score more than four goals in a game, in the early parts of the season? I mean, the offense was so lethargic, and I just want to make an analogy when you talk about, let me make an analogy when you talk about coaches and their passion. You know, when the Pirates brought in Lloyd McClendon back in 2001 or whatever, Lloyd McClendon was animated, and you saw him screaming, and everybody remembers the time he stole that base.
Yes.
And toss it, but screaming and yelling doesn't get you anywhere. So even though Mike Sullivan is more animated than Mike Johnson is, and he may put that outward appearance, he's obviously doing something behind the scenes that's driving the message to this team better. Because I feel like you can scream and yell all you want, that's not going to motivate grown men. But when you have a style and you have an approach that is accented by the fact you might like to scream and yell and look animated behind the bench, that's where it looks a little different.
So I had somebody bring up the analogy to me, and I think, or even kind of explain this to me, and I think this is pretty accurate, that if you're going to get in a car accident, you want to be the driver of that car. If your car is going to be totaled, you want to be the driver of that car. If something's going to go bad for you, there's a part of that where you want to be responsible in a way. You don't want to have your car wrecked because you loaned it out to your friend and he did a joyride all over the city and then wrecked it and everything. I would rather be responsible for something if the ship's going to go down. I want to go down my way. There's something to be said about that. And if this Penguin team is going to falter and not go as far as some feel they should in the postseason, if they're not going to be a champion, if they're even not going to get out of the first round, I'd rather them go out their way, and I mean the players' way, by how they are best built as a roster. These are offensive superstar players. There is a big three here. There are all these individual awards, Crosby, Malkin, Kessel even with the 40-goal seasons, and Letang, and everybody there. They are there to score goals and be an offensive juggernaut. Yes, you need defense too, and you need goaltending that's been decent in order to go far in the playoffs, but I would rather get eliminated losing 4-3 than the 2-1 Johnson game. The Mike Johnson system was, we're going to win 2-1 and we're going to take former 30 and 40 goal scorers and make them a Selke candidate and make them better on defense. Sure, they might need to be a little better on defense, but these guys are offensive beasts. Let them loose, and if you score 4 goals a game, you're probably going to win most of your game. There's not many teams that have this many offensive great players, with the exception of maybe the Blackhawks and a couple others. This system, if you're going to lose, I'd rather have it be this system with more of a wide-open offensive game, letting the offense go a little bit more. And if you're going to go out this way. At least also it would be more entertaining. It won't be as boring. Just watching games before kind of boring. It'll be more entertaining, and you'll be at least going out the way that you probably are built to go out if you're going to have to go out.
Yeah, that was the most interesting – sorry, I didn't mean to step on you. That was just the strangest thing of Sullivan's system to me. He played down to Rob Scuderi is essentially what he was doing. He made sure Scuderi was sheltered and safe instead of playing up to Crosby, Malkin, Letang, and Kessel. And that was just by far the most puzzling thing to me about his entire tenure.
And I think about you when you talk about those exciting, those exciting playoff games where you want to see, you want to see them lose 4-3. I think about, the one year that they were eliminated, was it first round by Tampa Bay? Or it was an early round exit.
First round, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I was at that game. The game seven. It was just they just looked so. You have this team that sometimes they should be so exciting, yet they look so lethargic and they look so they look exhausted and tired. And I think that's exactly I'd rather see an exciting down to the wire finish as opposed to a team that just kind of looks like they gave up.
Is there a particular matchup that you're scared of in the playoffs from a Penguins end, even going as far to if they have to play the Capitals later on, how you could see that shaking out? Because the playoffs are separate from the regular season. The Capitals might not be able to live on the power play like they do in the postseason, and there's been some teams the Penguins have been favorable with this year, but then some other teams, it's just been pretty scary. Well, who would you prefer to play, and then who don't you want to play, and if you can take that towards the Capitals since you're down in D.C.?
Well, let's see. I would be fearful of the Capitals. I actually think that they can play Florida pretty well. So I wouldn't be too. I saw when they had that overtime
another
game
playoff
and
series with Gogger. How about that?
Yeah.
No kidding. Yeah. Yeah. I would be fearful of. I'd definitely be fearful of the Caps. I think this time around, I think they could outplay the Rangers. That's not going to happen early on, though. But I got to say, I think that comes down to it. I think Washington's really the only one I'd be fearful of early on. I think that they can make anything competitive.
The Capitals do hit all the – they have all the bullet points of what you want in a championship team. They have the size. They have the offensive firepower. They have the defense. They have a goaltender who can stand his head and steal a game by himself. They do have it all. They got to be the prohibited favorite. They got to be. Before Nick, I didn't mean to cut you off, but just, Jim, I also want to get this from you. You're down in D.C. You're covering this team. You know about the history of the Capitals and Alexander Ovechkin never having even appeared in a conference final. And I have some friends who are D.C. sports fans and some others that just live down there. And the D.C. sports fan that I know is almost a very depressed, the curse of Dan Snyder, one of them likes to express and blame everything on him. Whereas you almost are waiting for that shoe to fall and for the team not to get the job done. You're expecting the championship not to happen. What is the fan base acting like down there? Do they know how good the Capitals are, or are they just saying, no, it's just the Caps. They're not going to do it. Ovechkin's going to be Dan Marino. It's not going to happen. Is there that hesitation? Are they expecting the worst, or are they very arrogantly happy, feeling like this is our year, we're going to do it now, this is different, we're the favorite?
I think the perception is that this is going to be the year. I think that's after all of these years of not seeing them produce anything. I mean, the perception I'm seeing is that this is our year. We've been waiting for it. I was covering a different story, and as luck would have it, I had some downtime, and there's a sports bar. It's in the first level of the Verizon Center. And you can walk in if you're not, even if you don't have a ticket. And this is the Rangers. This is actually the night that the Caps clinched the playoff spot.
You're talking about the Green Turtle, aren't
you? I wandered in. What's that?
You're talking about the Green Turtle, aren't you?
I'm talking about the Green Turtle. Indeed, I am.
It's a fun place. It's a fun place.
It is a nice place. Yeah. So I walked in and I just I had some time to kill, so I just watched in and these two Caps fans come up and they're drunk, but. It was just the perception of a lot of these guys is, this is the year, nothing's going to stand in our way. And I love the Dan Snyder analogy, though, because, I came down here this year and the Redskins, just as they were turning it around. And I'm really interested to see how that plays out next year with them, paying Kirk Cousins almost $20 million to play, play one season. And now that RG3 is going to Cleveland.
Oh,
but,
Lord.
Nonetheless, we're talking hockey, and I think that I think the perception is that if any year it's going to happen, it's going to be 2016.
I do have a friend that was even serious, wasn't even being funny. I have a friend who is a DC sports fan, and everything that happens negatively to his DC sports teams, even teams that are not owned by Dan Snyder, because he owns the Redskins, and that's it. He somehow makes this the curse of Dan Snyder, and once Dan Snyder took over the Redskins, they no longer were a Super Bowl favorite, and then all of a sudden every other team fell in line with that. It's actually quite humorous, but he can give you an essay on how he somehow will blame Dan Snyder for the Capitals' failure if they do not get to the conference finals and stealing the finals. So I'll send that to you. I'll have to do it for you, and you can maybe put that out on TV. It'd be funny. It is ridiculous. I would say besides Cleveland, as you bring up, they are getting into – maybe one of the more depressed sport locations for how much the fan base is thriving there, because it has been since the Redskins in the early 90s, since there's been a championship, and Cleveland much, much further than that. But it's been a while for many of these teams, and they build it up and then it all comes crashing down. Will that happen to the Caps again?
Oh, and remember, too, I mean, just to make one more sports analogy, look at what happened to the Nationals, because they had that collapse last year, and then you saw Jonathan Papelbon choking Bryce Harper, and it was just that happened when I got to Boston back in 2011, and the Red Sox were in the just finished that epic collapse. You know, if you're apathetic towards that certain team, it is kind of fun to watch, but it's going to be interesting to see how the city is towards the Nationals in a couple of weeks when baseball gets underway, and to see if they're going to be able to sustain any momentum, because every time that you may be right. Because every time you see the Nationals with some momentum, you know, Bryce Harper gets injured or something happens along the way.
But you don't think we're going to see Mike Weber choke out Alexander Ovechkin on the bench during games. So
somehow I doubt seeing that, but, you know, I think Ovechkin, for all intents and purposes, he's turned in terms of being who he was to who he is now. You know, it's a much different it's a different player, and that kind of scares me a little bit.
You say that the fans know how good the Capitals are. Is it cup or bust for them, or do you think that if they go out in like the conference finals or the finals, they'll think, all right, hey, we made it this far this year, we can build up on this? Is it all or nothing, or is there some hope, like a ray of sunshine there if they do lose out, depending on how they lose out?
I don't know. I mean, you think about it. I mean, you've had Ovechkin around as long as you've had Crosby, and Crosby's gotten closer a hell of a lot more times than Ovechkin has. And I think that there's that expectation. You know, I think when you let's put it this way. If they were at this point and they had, you know, 88, 89 points as a team, I think that you could say, okay, you know, if they make the conference finals and they lose, it's okay, that's progress. When you have only 15 regulation losses and, you know, you're at 109 points and you're likely going to get that President's Trophy, you know, it's useless in the long run, but that's likely the position they're going to be in. I think the expectations are pretty much cup or bust. Wouldn't yours be if your team looked that good?
Yeah.
It would be. I'm sure the Penguins fans would be. We all know Pittsburgh's cup or bust even when the team has 88 points.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Because we've been there.
It's rare, too, that one team, through two different coaches, will have President's Trophy season. So you'd have to think that one of these they're going to pounce on. And so to see two of them go in your lifetime, to think that you might not get a cup from either of them, that's got to be pretty devastating on a fan's psyche.
Yeah.
Especially when you bring up the 109 points so far for the Capitals, everyone had all the national attention over the Golden State Warriors and the 73 wins and if they're going to break the Bulls record. The Washington Capitals were right on the heels of the Detroit Red Wings 95 team in terms of total points and wins in a regular season. And by the way, that Red Wing team did not win the cup. Out of all the cups they have recently, that was not a cup team. They went to the finals and lost to New Jersey. So the championship is not assured no matter what you do. The wins record in baseball is by the Mariners. They didn't win a World Series. It's almost actually a little bit of a curse. I'm wondering if there aren't some Capitol fans that are a bit nervous and saying we almost don't want to be this good because the pressure is so ramped up that when Nick says a conference final and a Stanley Cup final is that good enough, and then you say no, when you think about it, you put it in the juxtaposition of Alexander Ovechkin's career and even this Washington Capitol franchise and even all of these players' tenure. They've never been to a conference final under Ovechkin. They've only been to one Stanley Cup final in the history of the whole franchise. If they get to a conference final or if they go to the Stanley Cup final and lose in a Game 7, to say that's a disappointment, taking into consideration that it's not been done before, that would be a hard pill to swallow. He's never been there, and you're going to say that getting there is no good. That's kind of risky. It's a lot of dice they're throwing. They're kind of a gamble the fans are kind of throwing with the Capitals this year. They never won a cup.
Yeah.
They've only been to the finals once. If they get to the conference finals or don't get to the cup final, it's risky to call that a failure, but I'm sure that's the case. I am sure that is how the fans feel down there.
I wouldn't say they're a long-suffering fan base, but I certainly think that, you know, you've been conditioned to feel like this? I mean, especially considering the fact that, you know, okay, the Redskins had that brief run in the playoffs. You know, the Wizards may not make the playoffs. You know, the Nationals haven't really proved themselves in the postseason yet. So this is probably the closest thing this city and this region is going to have to getting close to a championship for a little while at least.
Nick, any other questions for Jim before we let him go here?
I just wanted to agree with something you said way back at the start about Jim Rutherford that I was worried about. And just say something else about Jim Rutherford that I was wrong about. I was 100% with you that I was worried about Jim Rutherford. I'm in Charleston. I see a lot of Hurricanes. I've seen a lot of what the Hurricanes have done. By and large, they weren't impressive under his tenure. But, man, the past year I've been very wrong. And I realized he's kind of played to his strengths. Oh, he's always been good at finding offensive defensemen. You look at any of his teams through the years, and they've been littered from top to bottom with some really good puck-moving defensemen. Being able to get Trevor Daley and Justin Schultz for a steal is not helping any, but I was very hesitant and unhappy with the Jim Rutherford hire at first, but I have to give him some credit. This year, he's done extremely well, and he's played to his strengths, the back end, and that's what's helped really transform this team's makeup.
Well, I think we've certainly seen a change, and that's good. I think the optics of the original hire soured me, and I think you could probably count me as part of the disappointed fans that didn't see some sort of creative movement at the trade deadline. But you know, you're right. I mean, you can't give all the credit towards Mike Sullivan and not any towards the guy who decided to put Mike Sullivan in that job, because they could have gone one of many ways. I mean, they could have pulled what Anaheim pulled a few years ago, and Boudreaux got fired by the Caps, and the next week he was coaching the Ducks. So, you know, you could have got a mid-season coaching change does not have to be a internal promotion, but for some reason he decided to go that way, and I think we as a fan base are generally pleased by that.
You also always got to give, I don't care whether a coach, general manager, even a player acquisition, you got to give them some time. We are very quick in our society, and not just media, but fans and everybody, to judge, upon the hire, I hate this. And once you decide you hate this hire, then no matter what they do, you're going to be negative about it for a while until you're proved differently. We almost give them a guilty until proven innocent type of opinion there with people when they get jobs. And you got to give somebody like Rutherford time, the coach time, got to give everybody time. We don't really do that anymore, unfortunately. And it's always a roller coaster ride. You go on a Google search right now, you can pull up immediately, "In Shiro we trust" memes. Thousands of them will come up. There was a time the Penguins fan base loved Ray Shiro. He leaves. Oh, he screwed this over. He screwed that over. They're thrilled he's not there anymore. A lot of the fans are very fickle. A lot of the Pittsburgh fans are especially fickle, so that makes sense. And unlike you guys, though, I will say I wasn't elated with the hire, but I wasn't as upset as some others, because I did feel, as they were saying and feeling it as, that it was a temporary hire. He wasn't going to be here forever. It was probably going to be three or four more years as a bridge. Yeah. And he didn't have tremendous success in Carolina, but it's a smaller market, and he did go to two Stanley Cup finals and win a cup. So he had as many rings with Carolina as the Penguins had without him, to be fair. So there was one and one over the 2000s. He had one ring there and they had one. So it's not like he was giving you the Cleveland Browns equivalent in hockey. He had some level of success there, and it could be the bridge. So we'll see. Jim, before we let you go, I just want to kind of ask you, put on your analytical hat on, going toward the Stanley Cup playoffs. They're just such an animal. They're a different entity from the regular season. It's a quote-unquote playoff hockey. We talked about some teams you'd want to face, some teams you wouldn't want to face. If you had to give me an X factor for why the Penguins could win a Stanley Cup or even reach a Stanley Cup final, something in their game or another game that could be the reason, and then also an X factor, what would be the kryptonite and why they would not have a deep run, why they could lose in a first round or second round matchup, an X factor to their team, positive, and then on the flip side as well.
It's going to be very simplistic. The X factor towards winning a cup is how much of a leader going into this will Sidney Crosby be? I think, you know, he was only a couple of years in when they won the cup the last time, and you know, this is sort of I love going back to that quote from Sam Carcidi of out in Philly. Of that one game years ago when he said, I think we saw on a national stage Sidney Crosby pass the baton to Claude Giroux as the NHL's top player. But I think that this is a chance for Sidney Crosby to cement his legacy, I would say, if he can lead this team to a cup, if he could turn on whatever leadership abilities he can muster. So I think that's we need to see a very strong Crosby both on and off the ice. I think the X factor that may work against them when Evgeny Malkin comes back, is he going to be the same? Is he going to be the same? And what will his contributions be? Because, you know, we had, I think, only one postseason we can all think of when Malkin was actually a factor, and that was the year they won the cup.
Fair points. Nick, anything else for Jim?
No, it's just good to finally talk to the guy and voice to voice instead of keyboard, and look forward to doing this again sometime.
We should. And Nick, next time we do this, wear the pink jacket.
Oh, you know what's funny? I actually got cast as an extra in a movie filming in Charleston because of that pink jacket, so it's already paying for itself.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, so, you know, everything's coming up Milhouse.
There's a humble brag there for Nick. I got cast in
there
a movie, just dropped the bomb.
Exactly,
I got cast
right.
And really, Nick, this is radio, and Jim normally does TV. This is radio. You just lie. Just tell him you have the pink jacket on. What's he going to – he can't,
I already told him it's 80 degrees outside, yeah.
This isn't a movie where you're going to be taking the jacket off at some point, right?
We're not going to talk about that.
This is a legitimate movie, right? Okay.
We're not talking about the specifics. Just the fact that I made it enough for now.
Yeah. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it's kind of like being in a movie, like that Friends episode. Joey finally got cast in a movie, but he's Robert De Niro's butt double.
Al Pacino's butt. Yeah.
Either way, Robert De Niro or Al Pacino. Thanks again, Jim, for coming on. And
sure, guys.
Also drop us some tweets or DMs on when you're going to be maybe visiting Pittsburgh for me, or if you happen to be going down south for Nick.
Probably not for Nick.
All right.
All right. Well then.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Thanks again, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
Bye.
That was Jim Loque of Fox 5 in D.C. And Nick, it was great to hear that from Jim. You get some analysis even to the Washington Capitals perspective, because I want to touch on the Capitals so much this season while even covering the Penguins for the simple reason, let's call a spade a spade. The Washington Capitals are the prohibited favorite this year. This is their Eastern Conference to lose. They've been wire-to-wire the best team in all of hockey, you could even argue, but certainly in Eastern Conference. Alexander Ovechkin, while it's been topsy-turvy for Sidney Crosby the last few years, Alexander Ovechkin got over that. He's now taken his dumps and turned them into, once again, being an elite premier goal scorer, and this team has just everything you'd want in a champion, but they haven't done it before, so it's going to be a question. And it almost feels like maybe that matchup, the playoff matchup with the Penguins and Capitals, whether it be this year or not, will occur again. And I'm tempted to believe, even though I'm normally more pessimistic when it comes to the Penguins, and I do believe the Capitals, finally, this could maybe be the year for them, that if the Penguins and Capitals would meet, it might still be advantage Penguins, because we've seen even in that game recently, the Penguins could have their number. And if Fleury plays well and stands on his head to combat Holtby, the Penguins might be that team to be the Capitals' kryptonite, too.
Well, you hit the nail on the head why I'm not terribly worried about the Capitals. And it's one person, Braden Holtby, who has been fantastic throughout the year. There's no question about that. He's been exceptional. Vezina candidate through and through. But over the past month and a half, 2 months, his save percentage has been dropping. I saw a graph. Rolling save percentage for Braden Holtby over the last couple months has dropped from a unworldly like 9.4 to a substandard 9.1 or a 0.91 save percentage. That's Jeff Zatkoff territory for comparison. That's Jeff Zatkoff's career save percentage. And that's the thing is with Barry Trotz. It's the same thing he did in Nashville with his superstar goaltender in Pecorine. He ran the wheels off of him, which is great in the regular season. You run with the horse that brung you. It's what we see with Marc-Andre Fleury now. You want your best player out there to win. But Holtby, if he doesn't get some rest soon, he's going to become a big issue for the Caps because going into the playoffs with a goaltender who is basically playing like Jeff Zatkoff, only more athletic, that's very worrisome. And their backup, Philip Grubauer, I've watched him grow up in the in the minor league ranks. He played here in Charleston before going up to Hershey and then going to Washington. He's not a slouch, mind you. He's definitely better than Zatkoff, but he's not the 1-2 punch you want to turn to in the playoffs should Holtby continue his worn down slide. The Capitals really need to figure out what to do with Braden Holtby. They need to rest him. They've got the number one seed locked up. I think that's their best shot at winning because we've seen it with the Penguins. You can have your offense clicking as much as you want, but if your goaltender plays poorly, hello Philly, in the first round, you know, you're not going to get beyond it unless you can score 10 goals a game. And so that right, not really that bullish on the Capitals going to the Cup, let alone the third round. They need to rest Braden Holtby. He is that team's backbone. As much as Ovechkin is the leader, he is that team's backbone right now, and his play of late has suggested that he needs a lot more rest than he's getting.
It could kind of be the same as with Marc-Andre Fleury, that if the Penguins don't win another Cup with Crosby and Fleury together, you may look back in retrospect and say, when the Penguins' offense was at their best in the playoffs, Fleury was unfortunately at his worst. And when Fleury was at his best individually, the Penguins' offense was unfortunately at their worst. It's never really been met together. The hope why this team could go far again this year by getting in the playoffs is maybe they finally will have the two meeting together at the right time. And the Capitals in the past in the playoffs with Holtby had him standing on his head, almost stealing series by himself, but Ovechkin and the offense would struggle. To play devil's advocate with you, Nick, Holtby's really, since becoming the Capitals' starting goaltender, he's been their best player in the postseason. He's always stood in his head and played well in the playoffs. The offense has not caught up with him. Now the offense and Ovechkin is playing so well for a couple of years that maybe he'll go back to the playoffs, the light will shine bright again, he'll play well like he's always been in the playoffs, and the offense will continue to do what they've been doing this regular season. That if he plays poorly in the playoffs, it actually will be not what it has normally been for him in the playoffs. Holtby's normally played well in the playoffs. So this might be an aberration these last month and a half.
And really, for the Capitals, they have to hope it is. They are, understandably, the prohibited favorites for the Cup right now. No matter what the president's curse may say, the president's trophy curse may say, if you're the best team in the regular season, you're the prohibitive favorite to win the Cup, or any championship for that matter. I mean, look at the NFL this year.
Could be.
We had the Panthers as the best team, and then Broncos right behind them, basically. And what do? You get a Panthers-Broncos Super Bowl. It's just, that's generally how it shakes out, especially over a long tournament like the Stanley Cup Final. The Stanley Cup playoffs.
So, I guess, but not as much recently, though. We've had the 8-seeded LA Kings. We've had some teams that are low seeds go further than they ever have in history. It's been a little bit different the last few years.
And that's parity, and that's good. But you also look at that Kings team, and that was much similar to the Penguins. That was a team that struggled mightily throughout the start of the year and kicked it on at the right time. So they're an 8 seed, yeah, but they had the talent of a seed much, much, much higher.
They
underachieved playing
before,
down.
Yeah, they underachieved in the regular season.
Yeah, no matter which side you're taking on this minor years, there's always an exception to every rule. So it's not like either one of us are right or wrong. But I just feel like going into any postseason, if you're the best team, you're the prohibitive favorite. It's just the logical sense. So it makes sense that they are. The target is on their back, and I think that's going to hurt them just as much because how long has it been since they played a meaningful game? And so to have it the target on their back now, after not having anything to play for a month, month and a half, are they going to be able to do what Jim said, flip the switch? Or are they going to be, or are they going to have a tough time playing competitive hockey again? Because probably that rivalry game against the Penguins was the last time they had a really competitive game due to rivalry. Look what happened. They Penguins essentially scored 7 goals on them, but Sid's got waved off.
Well, and a lot throughout history, that's kind of what you're saying, though, has been proven true a lot throughout history in sports. That these the records for the best single seasons in sports history, with the exception of the 96 Bulls in basketball, have not led to championships. The Mariners failed. The Red Wings failed. The New England Patriots, there's been an undefeated team in football, but ever since then, they had an undefeated regular season. They went 18-0 all the way to the Super Bowl and go 18-1 and lose that game. The regular season success does not guarantee anything, and sometimes having too much regular season success can make you complacent, or the teams that are fighting for their lives are hungrier and maybe for a month and a half can get hot in a tournament setting. It might be a benefit to not be so good that you're almost bored when everyone else is gearing up and trying to twerk the roster so they can actually get in the postseason.
Well, and you know, as I say, on one hand, I say the best team is a prohibitive favorite. Then I, 10 minutes later, not even 10 minutes later, say this: how often have we seen a team get hot at the right time and then just take it all? We saw it firsthand with the Steelers and the Penguins.
We have,
You know, so that really is that. Outside of looking outside of the Capitals team itself, to be Captain Obvious here, is that's the biggest X factor: is who is hot at the right time. If no one's hot at the right time, then it still can be a cakewalk for the Caps. But it really comes down to who is playing their best hockey at the right time. And basing on what's been going on lately, it should be troublesome. It should be worrisome. It should be troublesome for Caps fans of it, because, I mean, they're winning, but they're not a dominant force. They're not like they were earlier in the year. And that same with the Blackhawks right now. They've had several game slides where you think, man, they're coming into the playoffs. They're less than 10 games with the playoffs, and this is how they're playing. You know, you got to kind of adjust that collar to let the sweat out of it.
And that's conversely with the Blackhawks. Unlike the Capitals, who have consistently underachieved in the playoffs, the Blackhawks have overachieved and met expectations and won championships. But there are some people just picking them because when in doubt, go to the Blackhawks. But they're really not playing well right now. The West is just as wide open as maybe the Eastern Conference is. Nick, I do want to ask you this, though, before we go off the airwaves here and enjoy our holiday weekend in this spring weather that I'm getting now in Pittsburgh that you always get. So I'm a little jealous that you don't even deserve to have 80-some degrees because you get it all the time. You need snow there every now and then.
I completely agree, by the way. But
it gets happier people. You have happier people down there. You're walking around, smiles. The warm weather climate brings out happiness. I just feel that would be the situation.
Everybody's prettier. Everyone's happier. It's truly stunning.
Yeah, I know. It really, really is. Yeah, everyone prettier. Absolutely. There's more. Everyone's prettier down in South Carolina than in Pittsburgh. I'll say that. No, I'm in Pittsburgh, so no dig to anybody but myself.
I'm from Pittsburgh, so I what is
yeah, yeah.
About me?
Oh yeah, I'm certainly not calling Nick is the exception to the rule down there in South Carolina.
Exactly.
Except for Nick. Do the Penguins need, especially with Malkin's injury, and he might come back at the end of the first round. Maybe he'll come back in the second round if they get there. We don't really know when he's going to come back. I've heard from some people it might be the end of the first round. It might even be midway through the first round, depending on how it's going. So it might not be that much of an issue if he comes back earlier than later. But taking into account Malkin's injury and how this Penguin team is in recent playoffs, underachieved offensively, which is why they've lost those series, they bring in Phil Kessel to be that sniper, to be that third member of the offensive big three. It's not been the year he would have wanted, the team would have wanted, or anyone really would have wanted from him. But with Malkin out and with this team not going to the playoffs, do the Penguins need Phil Kessel to step it up, or can they win in spite of him?
I think with Malkin out, he makes that second line. And there's always the issue of quality of player you're playing with, but look what he did in Toronto when the top line was just his. When he was allowed to carry the puck and create the offense and dictate everything, that's when he was at his best. So to have any success in the playoffs, they need to find that Toronto Phil Kessel. And I think we've seen flashes of that. Even when I was in the game in Raleigh when Malkin was out, he carried that second line, and he had one of the better games he'd had, scoring a goal, the only regulation goal for the Penguins that game. Because Malkin was out, and he was able to kind of dictate his own pace and carry that line and carry the puck and create flow. And thankfully for the Penguins, who need, to answer your question, need Phil Kessel to step up, they can't advance to the second round without Phil Kessel, because there's no lightweights like they've had in the past, like an Ottawa team that's just kind of there on the strength of one person or a hot goaltender. They need Phil Kessel to step up. And thankfully for them, if you look back at his history, and not just the playoffs, because he was in one playoff round with the Maple Leafs, that when they blew to the Bruins, not
how do they
which
know
is not his fault,
your,
but yeah. But you look at his history of being in tournaments in the Olympics, and it was Team USA. He has the history of stepping up in those big moments when it matters. He plays to his full potential. For better or worse, the regular season, he goes through his motions. He'll play game to game like a different player. Some games he's in it, some games he's not. We've seen this. We see this now with his scouting report coming into it. But in the tournaments, he's had a history of playing to his best. Like he's played in the Philadelphia games, like he's played in the rivalry games. And I think that is something Penguins need to count on to advance to the second round, to advance until Malkin's back. And then it becomes an interesting question of, if everyone's healthy, how do you split up the lines? Do you put Kessel down on the third line to center with Bonino, who he seems to have some chemistry with, and then somebody like Bo Bennett? Or do you keep that top line that works really well of Kessel, Malkin, and Hagelin? I mean, for years people have been clamoring for that three-headed monster back of where Jordan Staal was doing that third line. Well, there's your chance to do it. You've got a guy on the third line that is a legitimate threat, a legitimate top winger. Do you put him there? Do you let him control that line? And then you've got rolling three lines, and then you can pair them together if necessary. It's a nice problem to have, but it's something that definitely needs to be thought about if and when the Penguins reach that level.
I don't think also when they got Kessel, that was my thought. And now part of the reason getting Kessel is to give you that security blanket of sorts that I don't think there's any team out there that's going to feel bad for the Penguins losing Malkin, because they can slide in a offensive juggernaut in Phil Kessel of the past. I mean, not many teams can say, oh, man, Malkin's out, so now we're going to throw Phil Kessel into getting him more of a role. Phil Kessel's a continued all-star and had a Hall of Fame pace himself before coming to the Penguins and dipping a little bit. So it's a nice guy to be able to slide in there. And if it's not broke, don't fix it. If he's playing well after it's been such a rollercoaster ride, switching him out and demoting him of sorts, that could really ruin things. And even when Malkin comes back, you might still need Kessel. So it might actually, unfortunately, create – you're looking at probably – you probably just articulated how we're going to have a fan divide. Can you imagine that, Nick, where Kessel leads the Penguins to a first-round series victory, Malkin comes back towards the end of that, they move Kessel away from the line he was on when he was playing so well, then the Penguins are eliminated – the whole offseason talk is going to be, you screwed it up. Kessel should have been the guy. If it's not broke, don't fix it. Now the whole blame will be on that the management ruined Kessel when he finally. That once again will separate the fan base right there. That's almost doomsday for the fan base if that occurs.
Yeah, because not only are you moving Malkin or inserting Malkin on the Kessel's line that's worked so well, possibly moving Kessel, but then you're possibly breaking up what has been the third best line and the best third line in hockey over the past couple of weeks. And it's just, once again, these are good problems to have, but
they're good.
Man,
yeah.
they can seem daunting right now for us average brained people.
Well, speak for yourself there.
Yeah, well, of course. I forgot the company, the illustrious company I'm in. So my apologies.
I had to get arrogant at least once on the show. Yeah,
you haven't said asinine, by the way, either, which is impressive.
And you said asinine, so we got it at least on the broadcast. Asinine.
There we go.
This was an asinine broadcast, I guess, of sorts. Everything is asinine radio gold. But I guess it does. It's a good problem to have, but that's exactly why. And Jim kind of went in this direction. It's exactly why I didn't want Mike Johnson to have the job when he did, because when you have a team that is so star ridden. And you're championship or bust, and you have high expectations from the fan base, from media, from the management of the team, And when you have a lot of guys in their prime that are needing to get that first ring or second ring, and there's a lot of legacies on the line, you want to have these problems. They're good problems, but also you want to have the right guy making those decisions. It's hard to give it to their first NHL job, your rookie head coach, and go ahead and say, make these decisions with the high expectations and all the stars that are there and all the tough decisions you're going to have to make. It was almost a situation for Mike Johnson. It wasn't fair to put him in. It almost was unfair to Mike Johnson to have him in that situation, have it be cup or bust in his first year as a rookie head coach in the NHL, and now it would be looked upon that he had an unsuccessful tenure and is so vilified by Penguins fans. He had a year and a quarter of the job in his first go with the NHL as a head coach, and it was actually, while it's a good job to have Crosby, Malkin, Kessel, Fleury, and Letang, it's not, there's reasons why it could be a bad job to be your first NHL job, too.
Yeah, and you look at any of those people that the Penguins interviewed. They went for Willie Desjardins, who turned them down for Vancouver. Then they went for Bill Peters, who turned them down for Carolina.
And that's kind of comical now, though, those two turned. That's comical, those two decisions by them. But
Yeah. Well, Desjardins is flailing, barely keeping his head above water in Vancouver, which I think is more of an issue of the roster makeup than the coaching. Peters is performing well with a depleted roster in Carolina, but any one of those three, really, what screams about them being a good hire for this team in hindsight? This isn't like a David Blatt situation in Cleveland where he hired on and then LeBron James decided he's coming.
Mm-hmm.
This is a situation where you know what you're getting into when the time comes. And so the fact that, in hindsight, either of those three seemed like a good choice is just makes you shake your head a bit about what was going on with the team at that time.
And maybe those two made the decision not to come to the Penguins because they felt exactly what I'm saying. That's a better roster in Pittsburgh than Vancouver or Carolina or anywhere else, but that's not the best job for me right now. I want to prove myself. I want to rather work wonders with a depleted roster so I can be thought to be this god of coaching early on in my career rather than fail on high expectations with the Penguins and their successful and talented roster and then not get hired for 2 or 3 years and get flung around in obscurity. I mean, David Blatt, as you said, he came there before LeBron, so it might have been unfair to have him judged. He went to the NBA Finals, 30 wins, and he's fired. The expectations just truly changed when LeBron got there. And now David Blatt might not be a head coach again in the NBA for several years. He'll probably have to be an assistant first, go back to Europe. It kind of sucks for him. He got in a bad situation for him in that spot because the expectations went a little bit too high for his britches, basically. You don't want the expectation to be too much for you, and then it can screw you over later, and that's kind of what happened to him and maybe happened to Mike Johnston. But so far it has not happened yet to Mike Sullivan, as he's currently the miracle wonder creator here with the Pittsburgh Penguins, that he's getting all the credit for the turnaround. It'll be interesting if this fan base ever turns on him with a poor decision that maybe is made with Kessel, Malkin, whatever, in the playoffs. But right now, there's reason for optimism. Seems like Nick is optimistic, Jim's optimistic. I'm very rarely optimistic, so for me to be optimistic at all, it shows you something, too. So, any final words? We're back on the airwaves here, Nick.
It is nice to knock off the cobwebs a bit. It was good to talk to Jim finally. Like I said, I've been friends with him as much as you can be over Twitter and Facebook and social media for several years now, much like you and I, which was good to finally meet you when I was up there in October. I don't know if we had a chance to say that. Even though it was brief, it was good to meet you. But he's one of those people that, like Sean Gentile, it's one of those people I feel I'm as good of friends as I can get through social media, and I look forward to meeting them one day. So it was good to finally talk to Jim. It is nice to be back on the airwaves. I look forward to many more of these, many smoother ones, because, you know, we're our own harshest critics. And
right.
Yeah, I know, man. It's just nice to be back, and it's so nice to have a team that's fun to watch and fun to cover again, because those first couple months, it's just running on fumes. There was nothing. What do you say again that you haven't said for the 10th time? This team seems bad. Why are they doing this?
Maybe it's better that we took that month and a half hiatus, because during that period of time, it would have just been well, this team is not going to get it done. We hate it. It sucks. And there's no reason for you to watch. And I'm not sure why you're listening to us. And this is just complaining and moaning on your Radio PI airwaves.
Hey, and they didn't score again. Yeah.
Yeah, we could almost argue that the Pittsburgh Penguins, Nick, they drove us away. They drove the podcast away with their level of play. But now they brought us back, and it's exciting again. And I will tell you, Sean actually went to the same high school as me. He's a couple years older. He graduated before me, so I wasn't friends with him in high school. But one of his best friends, Garrett Garcia, is a kid that was graduated in my class. And my girlfriend and I were at this new club/bar in Lawrenceville area a few weeks ago. We're waiting in this long line. It was wrapping around this small bar/club. Everyone's complaining, as of course I would be as well. And we're standing there waiting, and Garrett gives me a look. I hadn't seen him in a while. One of those high school friends that you haven't seen in a while. Say, hey, Mike, haven't seen you. I say, hey, Garrett, we shake hands and catch up. And then all of a sudden, Sean is standing right next to Garrett.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, hey, I'm also reconvening with you too.
I've heard good things. Chris Mueller, good friend of mine from 93.7 The Fan. We're not name dropping here, people. We're just kind of connecting. Has hung out with him, Sean Funny, and has nothing but good things to say about him. And he is one of the people I look forward to finally meeting next time I'm in town. But for the meantime, he just remains one of those ethereal mysteries that we'll have to wait for another day.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I know that despite you have some others that you need to meet, though, Nick, once you've met me, it's all going to be downhill from there. At least you realize that. So.
Well, I mean, it was going to be downhill meeting me from whoever he met in the first place. So it's, you know, that's not a steep hill to climb, you know?
Right. But now that, Nick, you met myself and you met James Santelli, I mean, after us, it just, you know, you met the top of the platform. There's nothing else. You know.
That's right. I've ascended to Everest, and now everything's just coming down from the peak.
You've been on the mountain. Sean and Chris, they're just going to be a letdown. Anyway, I digress. All right, Nick, happy to talk with you again. Enjoy your always warm weather down there in South Carolina.
I had to come back in. I was getting sunburnt, so it's tough, man. It's a tough life.
I know it's tough for you.
We'll do it again soon, bud.
Absolutely. Nick Case, PensMinuteShip.com. He's going to turn some articles there for you coming up in the coming weeks. He'll also do his own broadcast where he'll be the lead host next week, and I'll give you more of Mike Osti's radio stylings and musings while I host with guests like Jim Loquet and others. This has been another asinine Radio Gold broadcast as Pens Initiative Airways and the Radio PI Podcast Network reboots itself for the end of the regular season and the postseason stretch run with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Maybe even give you some PSI, Pittsburgh Sports Initiative content on the air with the Pittsburgh Pirates season about to begin and the Pittsburgh Steelers about to prepare for another NFL draft. But it has been Radio Gold here on the Radio PI Podcast Network.
Wins. Shutouts.
Shootouts.
Forehand.
Five hole.
It's time for your recap of Pittsburgh Penguins hockey.
The most important interviews, best information, hottest news, and no topic is off limits.
Radio PI. Now on the Radio PI Podcast Network.